Hello, everybody. Konnichiwa. Konbanwa. Ohayou gozaimasu. And welcome to the show, where I am speaking now from my living room in Osaka, Japan. I'm so very happy that you are participating in the listening of these products of punk. I was very, very happy to talk to my friend Simon Lam, and I think you can gather the impression of excitement easily from listening to our excited voices speaking together, and yet we're both very calm and specific in how we said things. I really enjoyed having this interview with Simon, and I enjoyed listening back to it. One of the things I want to say that we did not talk about, which was very surprising since I just did an interview with Chris Wallard from Hot Water Music about his participation in the Naked Raygun tribute album, but Simon and I did not talk about it, but I thought it should be mentioned at the top here, since it's going to a good cause, that Simon partook in that tribute album in the band Dan Vapid and the Cheats and their cover of Surf Combat, which was from the album Throb Throb, which is my favorite record by Naked Raygun. And actually, me and Ben used to cover it in the early days. I think when we were still called All Night Garage Sale instead of Screeching Weasel. So all you need to do online to find that tribute record is put into the Google machine in the search spot or speak directly to your machine computer, which I hear you can do nowadays, and ask it to find for you Godspeed, a tribute to Pierre Kesdi, and order that on vinyl or digital or buy a t-shirt. Also, while you're on the internet machine, you might as well look up the Patreon for Jughead's Basement and help out. Like fellow punks, Gentle Savage, who came in at the $2 per month donation, and also Ryan Montgomery, who paid for a full year at the $10 donation amount. So thank you to both of you. And now they will be able to enjoy a varying amount of unedited videos at the Patreon site, plus the writings I'm doing for a book that will be out eventually called We Screeched, where I have photos and short stories about the bands I've been in. Also, you get the podcast delivered to you before the at-home audience. You get all that shit, and sometimes you get stuff in the mail. Just go to www.jugheadsbasementpodcast.com and press that button called Patreon and dive in. Please, please help out as much as you can. I want to keep this going as long as I possibly can. I think I'm getting better at it, and it's getting more and more exciting for me, and I just need to keep that audience popularity up. And you can help by doing that in many different ways: sharing the podcast, one-time donations at PayPal, or you can write a review at Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. One last thing I'll mention is that in the middle of the show, you will hear a sponsor called Factor Meals. Factor Meals and GoFresh have been nice enough to help out a bit here at Jughead's Basement and have me advertise for them. And I think it is quite a useful tool in these modern days of our busy lives. That's enough of words from me in the solo form. Now let's get into me and Simon talking about a whole bunch of shit in the most lovable form of shit. Now you're listening to Crash of the Moons by the Riverdales off their 2010 record Tarantula. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Jughead's Basement, subcategory lo-fi interviews with hi-fi guests, episode 176 with Simon Lamb of Dan Vapid and the Cheats, The Riverdales, Screeching Weasel, The Methadones, The Riddlins. On this episode, Simon talks to us about such things as Circus Maximus, Japan Talk, Simon and Jughead's history of nearly 25 years friendship, Scotland and punk rock. Simon is an actual working illustrator and designer. A potentially difficult question about how Simon replaced Jughead in Screeching Weasel. The genesis and continuing relationship of Dan Vapid and Simon Lamb. Plus, much, much haggis and pizza and guitar oh my! We'll be long gone soon. And I just wanna tell you that I love you. We'll be long gone soon from the crash of the bus. The crash of the bus. Oh, look at that face.
You can see me? Is this going through?
I can see and hear you.
How are you? It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too. I love your glasses. They are glasses.
They are certainly glasses. My eyesight, my failing eyesight. Yeah, it's.
I think they call it growing older, growing old even.
Where are your glasses?
I don't need them as much.
You've dodged that bullet so far?
Yeah. Well, you know, I have ones that make me look very old. I have bifocals. But with my own notes, I can write very big, so I don't need them. When I'm reading books or someone else is writing, I have to pull out the bifocals.
I have my bifocals right here. So I use those when I go out, and these for all day on the computer.
Yes, all day on the computer. So that is one of the main things you do is work on a computer.
I'm still doing graphic design. Yeah,
I'm sure we'll hit that, Simon. I'm happy to have you here. So thanks for doing this with me.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm going to say off the bat because I can't see avoiding it making any sense. But we are going to hit on some probably touchy subjects. You know, like with you and me. I mean, we're good friends, so we got through it. But yeah, I just want to say that I want to do that. Respectfully and but honestly, and see how that goes. But I just want to say that in front, just so you know.
No, I'm fine with all that stuff. Maybe not too in depth with certain other people.
No, I don't really care about that as much. I don't. This yeah. isn't about like slinging mud or anything. But yeah. we will have to touch on it. Just
absolutely, absolutely.
Because I think it'd be strange if we didn't.
Yeah. fully fine with that.
Okay, cool.
It's really cool that you've got this thing going. I spoke to you last April when we played.
Yeah, I know time really goes by. And Maximus.
Circus Maximus.
John in the future here. Circus Maximus took place on April 29th, 2022. That was the first version, and it took place at the Chop Shop in Chicago. Bands playing included Dan Vapid and the Cheats, Kepi Ghoulie, the Mitochondriacs, and Luke McNeil. There was also art on display by Kepi Ghoulie, B-Face, Justin Santora, Jason West, Barry Callahan, and also others. Back to Simon and Jughead.
And we were talking about the show, and then I think I finally went on it after you did Chris's B-Face.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just started scrolling through, and I had no idea, like, how many people you've had on here and the names that you've had. So, yeah, it's really cool. And I did see you finally did your interview of yourself, or not you, but somebody interviewed you.
Well, some of that was before that you and I talked about it. I think so. The one that Simon to the audience that Simon brought up with me do is me actually interviewing myself. I think you said that, right? Like in interview style. I haven't done that yet. That one was someone interviewed me for another show. And then I asked if I could put it on my program too, but that one is still coming.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun.
Especially with the video and Zoom, I'll have to do like look to the side and look to myself and look back. So
Stump yourself for silly answers.
Just like, and have someone in my hand, someone else's hand come out, like, and just. So it's 9 a.m. here, and it's 7 p.m. where you are in the Midwest.
It is in a sweltering, sunny forest park right now.
Yeah, and now have you been in? No, you haven't been in America longer than you've been in Scotland yet, have you?
No, I've been. No. I've been here. This is my 16th year here.
16th, yeah. You're more than 32.
I certainly am. 48.
I when I said that, I remembered that when I started saying that I was from Chicago was when I was in Chicago longer than I was actually in the suburbs. So,
okay.
But now I'm in Japan, so now it throws it all off. I'm definitely not Japanese. That's going to be harder to pull off.
How was the culturally, like culture shock wise? I mean, we've both done huge moves. Yours is way stranger than mine.
Yeah. It's on the other side of the world. I didn't, you know, it's done with kid gloves here because where I work at Universal Studios, we sort of live in our own bubble. You know, it's mostly, we all live in a dorm, all the people that are Westerners. So it's kind of a gentle joining of being in Japan. But I immediately love the culture and actually hanging out with actual Japanese people. So I quickly sort of just started doing that. So I didn't really have much shock. You know, a lot of people have it with food, but Osaka is very much like, it's actually the sister city to Chicago. It's very blue collar, very foodie people. So
okay, cool.
There's nothing I really miss. I mean, if I wanted to get a good pizza, I could get one, you know. Hot dogs is not very good here, though. So
they're not very good here either. I'm not a
yeah,
huge fan.
But culture-wise, I think I did some study. You know, I love studying philosophy anyway. So I did a little study between East and West before coming here. So I set myself up to not be that ugly American, which I see come out very often here. And it's very disappointing.
Really?
I don't want to get into the big topics of racism these days, but there is a subtle racism that comes out in Americans when they're in like here, like or working here. They don't understand the system and way which Japanese work. So they immediately blame it on like that they're stupid or they don't know what they're doing. It's like, no, it's a shame culture. It's a different, you know, you're not that at the center of the universe. You know, it's more about the people around you. So you have to start seeing it through different eyes. But I think I had an in on that already.
Okay. That's
so
good.
It wasn't so shocking for me. What do you think was the most what was the most difficult thing for you when you we're going to hop back to when we first met, but now that we're talking about it, what was most difficult for you when you first moved?
I mean, it was lucky because I had a few friends that I knew through music, but the most difficult thing is the obvious ones, like my family. Like we're pretty close. I mean, you've met. Yeah, that's the only thing that probably still. Constantly chatting in the back of my head, you know, like my parents are getting older, but my life is here now. It's really strange, but like culturally wise, no, just slipped right in. It was fine.
It's weird that I think of it as an afterthought, but I do. Yeah, I'm mother getting older. She's in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
My sister Jeannie is a single mother, so there is stuff that's.
I remember Jeannie, and is it Levi?
Yeah.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, but now he's like 16 and getting ready for college.
Yeah. like your memory of people and just freezes in time. That's how you remember them. You don't realize it's been so long. So,
yeah. When I think about that, it gets to me. But somehow I'm really good at like putting it at the back of my brain. But then it comes up occasionally. And then I'm like, oh, then you feel like your responsibility level has like gone down a little bit lower than it should be.
But I think the closest I've ever really thought about moving back was after the pandemic or during the pandemic, because it's like nobody knew what was going on. But once the dust settled with that, it's just slipped right back in. Actually, more so playing more, enjoying stuff more, just like doing as much as I can every single day, because you just know if it's ever going to stop again. So,
you know, I acquainted it a lot. I think even Vapid started picking up on this too, because I think he read The Plague, or I had him read it, the Camus book. But that book sort of studies the idea of something big happening in the world and how it actually makes people realize a lot of things, but also that starts showing who they actually really are. So you see a lot of like a lot of ugliness came out of some people and a lot of goodness came out of people, but it's sort of magnified or accentuated during that time. So
yeah.
So if you're keen to that stuff, you can make very important observations about yourself during that time.
Absolutely. I think out of everybody I know, I was one of the last ones to sort of step back out. I got so used to just being, I've been working at home for myself for years now. I mean, that didn't change, but seeing people and not playing, practice, whatever, like obviously that went away. And then I thought I was doing fine, but after that year and a half, I'm just like, yeah, I'm not quite ready to go back out yet.
Mm-hmm.
So take a little bit of getting your head around.
Yeah, I'm surprised how things have gone. I wouldn't say exactly back to the way they were, because things have changed and advanced. More people, a little bit more like tech savvy, because they had to be. So, and mm-hmm. some of that remains around. Like almost everyone is on Zoom now. Even John Haggerty, who's older than me, I just asked him if he wanted to do an interview, and he's like, "Yeah, yeah, no problem," on Zoom. So even even old folks had to like.
Those guys are playing. So Susie and I, you know, Mike. So we do Methadone's rehearsal. We share a room with those guys. I think Pegboy are heading off to the UK to play Rebellion Fest.
Oh, I heard. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, man, that's great. Yeah, I had Larry on the show, and I was pretty happy that they were still going, you know, here and there. But it's more like what happens with us when we get older. We play here and there.
Yeah, exactly.
So Simon, let's go in the way back machine. I'm excited about looking about this stuff, because so you were where I visited you was in your hometown then? Were you from there originally when I first met you? Dundee, is that where it was? I'm just getting it off the top of my head. I didn't even look it up. Is that where you were close to Dundee, or where were you?
We want to go a little bit further back than that. I first met you in Edinburgh.
Yes, I know we met in Edinburgh, but you were living in where then?
I was living in Dundee. Which is the city that's about a 25-minute drive from the tiny town that I grew up in called Arbroath.
Arbroath.
Arbroath. So you came there, you came in, I think my dad set you up with the map for, you went off and did some train ride way up north.
Oh, yeah, I did. I was on my own. Yeah, I did. That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, where you stayed with me was in Dundee.
Yeah, Dundee. And then you took me to some castle ruins that are around there that are pretty beautiful. Do you remember that? I often try to look it up and I can never remember the name of that place.
It's, I got to pull my phone out here. It's a castle called Dunottar Castle. And it is it's beautiful. It's 40 minutes in the car from my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just remember going in there with you. We paid, you did walk all the way down. And I turned around to say something. I was like, you'd gone and you were like climbing a wall. And this castle's on a cliff, like with severe drops everywhere. But
yeah,
you're having fun.
Yeah, I thought I was immortal.
You survived.
Yeah. So we met. I didn't forget, Simon. I was just saying that's where you were from. But we met because mm-hmm. I came to the Edinburgh Festival with my group then, Neo-Futurists for Too Much Light. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't bring a guitar. And you, I think, I don't know, what were you on some message board or something then? Or I don't even know. What.
I think it was the Weasel site back in the day. You'd posted something about being in Scotland. Could you borrow a guitar?
On the Weasel site? Sometimes it was the Boredom site, then the message board, right? That back then too.
I forgot about that.
I think that was the only punk message board that I was a part of, because I knew Enoch and all those people. So
yeah.
they had a pretty popular message. I don't even know if those things are around anymore, but that might have been where it was. I'm not sure. But
it was about 1% good came out of that message board and 99% just crap.
Yeah, there becomes some ugly trolling. I had that whole crazy incident, which I'll probably talk about in a podcast in depth sometime, where even in blackouts wanted to self-release something. And we were like, oh, we'll have the audience, you know, do it. And this is before the days of, you know, where that was being done, you know, like crowd surfing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember people attacked me. Some people had to come to my defense, like really good friends, because people are like, well, it shouldn't be released if you can't get a label to put it out. And I was like, these are some of the most unpunk things I think I've ever heard on the site that's supposed to be the most punk out of everybody, you know?
Yep. It's bizarre. I remember similar sort of thing, Kevin Seconds. And this might be before GoFundMe was an actual thing, but he put something out about he needed a van so he could tour and keep on creating music and set something up where people could throw in a buck if they wanted or not. Which, I mean, it's fine.
John in the future, and I've just done a modicum amount of studying, the only amount allowed to get this editing done on this podcast this week. But I did find a site that had like the ranking of when crowdfunding had started. And the first one was actually ArtistShare, which I think was a British one in 2000. There's also a band Marillion that my brother loved. They did one in like 1999. They're known as the first band to actually crowdfund to pay for their tour of America. So yes, I was right. Most of the crowdfunding didn't start until after Even in Blackout's House of the Fall of Even in 2006. Indiegogo started in 2008. Kevin Seconds used for his van Kickstarter, and that started in 2009. And Kevin from 7 Seconds used it in 2012. Patreon started in 2013. And there's more and more and more. So that's a little bit of the history of modern-day crowdfunding. But then again, the word patron goes way, way back. I haven't done any studying this, but I often talk about how artists back in like the Renaissance period had patrons. I think artists always had patrons in the old days, and now it just came back around to it again.
So strange. To me, it was just like the biggest irony to say to somebody, if you can't get a label to put it out and it shouldn't be out. It's like, I don't think any of us would exist in a punk scene if that were true. Like all of Weasel's first albums were put out by us, basically with some help of, some people that were basically labels, but not labels at the same time. We were just doing it ourselves,
Yeah, maybe you guys would do your own artwork, like just, I mean, the whole thing was built on DIY, do it yourself, like because labels wouldn't put out music like that. Obviously, like smaller labels grew and grew and grew, and there's tons of them now, but yeah, like to be shot down in flames for try to do something yourself is kind of dumb.
So we met you. So you came out all the way to Edinburgh just to drop the guitar off for me,
Yeah, I mean,
and
it's,
I,
yeah.
yeah, and then I think you stayed for the show, and then at maybe at the end of my stay. My show in Edinburgh. I think I came to visit you, or was it the next time? Do you even remember? I think I came out.
I think I might have come back. No, I did come back to pick up the guitar,
Oh,
obviously.
yeah, you did come back.
I don't think you came through at that point to where I
No,
was
it
living.
must have been the time when I started writing Weasels in a Box. That might have been the first time I
That
came to you,
was
like
the time you came out, yeah.
2001, I think, somewhere around there.
Yeah, because the neo-futurist thing was, it
Like
had to be
99
early.
or something like
Was it
that?
99 or 2000?
Somewhere
Yeah,
around there,
99.
2000 or 99, somewhere around there. Yeah.
Then we kind of hit it off. We kept in touch. And then you told me that Weasel was doing that House of Blues show
Yes, and then
in
you came out
2000.
to,
Came out for that. And yeah, that was awesome. 23 years ago, 24 years.
Right. And you were doing a band which you didn't really want to me to have any music. Were you in the Ritalins at that time? That was the band that you were in then, right? Or
Think they were, yeah, that was back then.
yes, but you're not proud of that stuff.
No.
What?
It was goofy, throwaway, typical paint by numbers, punk rock, pop punk.
Right, but would you say, Simon, that's, I mean, in the moment, in that time, were you doing something that you, this is a weird question, but I don't want to say you weren't doing it because you didn't believe in it. I assume at the time you thought you were doing something for yourself that was cool, or were you aware that you didn't think it was very good? Or is that more of like looking in
No, it's this
retrospect,
at the
sort of look
time.
at what you've done since then?
Yeah, I'm probably looking at it with my older jaded eyes now. Yeah,
Yeah.
the fuck was it? No, it was fun. It was definitely fun. My brother Richie was in the band with
Oh,
me.
that's right. Yeah, Richie.
It's got so long ago, I can't remember much, but yeah,
Yeah.
that was definitely on the go around that time that we met.
Had you been in a bunch of punk bands by then, or?
No, it was just that one. And another band, a little different, not quite as sort of like punk rock, but that was it.
You know, UK is classic for having come up with some of the best first generation punk bands, but how much of it reached Scotland? It doesn't. Were you inundated with punk by then, or did you have to go out and search for
Are you talking the sort of first wave or
yeah, I'm talking anything that you would consider punk that you would launch off to learning, you know, I mean, whether it's the Sex Pistols or any like or Clash or Ramones, it launches off into finding Green Day, Screeching Weasel,
sure, yep.
Queers.
My first memory of being exposed to a punk or punk was, I mean, I was born in 75, so I was probably, it was early 80s, and my mom would walk from the house down to what we would call the high street, where the grocery stores were, the butcher, you know, the fruit and veg shop, all that stuff. And around that time, I just remember my mom saying, don't stare, don't stare. And they'd be like your classic spiky punks from yeah, the first sort of wave of it from the 70s. But at the same time, you'd have mods hanging out, and then you'd also have soccer hooligans. And it was a small town, a small fishing town. And just outside the town was an English Marine base. And those guys would come in on the weekends and get, so it was just, wow. It was carnage for a long time there.
So for a small town, you had a lot of influx of different types of people come through then, huh?
Yeah. Yep. And the only ones that nobody messed with were the fishermen. They were left. Nobody would mess with them.
Well, they're pretty tough and they're just hardworking and they're,
yep. You'd have the punks, the mods, like the soccer hooligans, the, I don't know, I'm going off on tangent. That my first,
no, I that's is, fine with me. Yeah. But so, yeah, then, so some of the punks influxed into that. So that was more like style. Did you even know the music by the,
I didn't know. I just remember being fascinated seeing it. And then, I mean, my dad he was a musician. He's just loves music. So that was kind of ingrained in me. But my next door neighbor, they had a kid who was a little bit older than me. And he would come over, he'd give me like a Motorhead 7-inch or an Iron Maiden LP. And I was about 10 or 11 at the time and just loved this stuff. I'd never heard anything like it. I know my dad hated it, but kind of let it slide. Just evolved like heavily into Dylan. Still am a complete Dylan fanatic. Mm-hmm. But around 15, 16, bands like the Pixies. And then it just went like that. Discovered you guys. But it was really hard to get music back then or to find stuff. We'd listen to John Peel's radio show late night on a Friday, and he would play the most obscure sort of like American punk rock stuff.
And those are the Sex Pistols and their single, that's Anarchy in the UK. And going back to Max's Kansas City and the LP, and the best band on it, I think, are the Fast.
Nowhere in Scotland would sell it. So I think there was a store in England that used to put out a mail-out catalogue. You would go through it, call them up, see if they sold the record. You'd send away a check. It would take 4 or 6 weeks for you to get this thing. And I mean, now it's just like a touch of a button. You've got everything. But yeah, compared to what you grew up in Chicago, mm-hmm. and it being kind of on your doorstep, finding stuff in Scotland was pretty tough.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't want to assume that my audience is naive, but I always like to give them stuff that they may or may not know. But I think some people might assume because of the UK and the Sex Pistols, all of that, that it would drip down to Scotland or up. See, I always thought it was up. Down, but you're up, actually. That it would drip up to Scotland. But from my recollections, it was not that way. Like Scotland is its own world in that way. Like I remember, like you said, it wasn't very easy to get the music there then.
No, they Exploited. They came from Scotland.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember what year they came out.
The Exploited became a band in 1979 and put out their first record, Punks Not Dead, in 1981.
There was definitely that sort of bands like that around, but getting the music that we were into, like 16-year-old skateboarders in this silly little fishing town, it was so hard. And that's when you would have tapes, like somebody would get an LP, they would put on tape for you, and that's where you get the music.
What then moved, I know you had been married before, is that what brought you up to Dundee? Did you move together or how? What?
No, I went to school there. I studied graphic design. They got a pretty good art school there. So I think I moved up there when I was 19, and then I was there until I was 32, two, yeah, 4-8 now. So yeah, and then moved here.
What is that considered, like, that if you're looking at like the Illinois structure or like America, what is Dundee like? Still not a big city. It's still a smaller city.
It's small. I mean, you've got Edinburgh, Glasgow, Aberdeen. Dundee's probably the fourth.
Oh, okay. So it is up there in being like a proper city.
Yeah, it is a proper city. I'm not actually sure how many cities are in Scotland. Might only be four.
Well, John in the future here with some interesting facts that I didn't know. There are 8 cities in Scotland, and from largest to smallest, it goes Glasgow, Edinburgh, Aberdeen, Dundee, Dunfermline, Inverness, Perth, and Stirling.
Yeah, Dundee was the smallest out of all of them. But it's so, Scotland's tiny. It's like you could.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit bigger than Illinois. So going, when you were over, we would drive to Edinburgh, which was like an hour and 20 minutes. You drive to Glasgow, that's 2 hours. That's like, well, you better pack a packed lunch just in case something goes wrong on this really long car ride.
Yeah, yeah.
And like now living here, it takes 2 hours to get from here into the city sometimes. It's nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
So different. But yeah, the Dundee bands didn't really come. When we started going out to see bands, like me and my friends, they would stop in Glasgow or Edinburgh usually. You know, Dwarves came through. The Queers were there all the time. You guys, a little bit later on, even in Black House.
Yeah, I think you introduced Liz to Haggis in a Can when we...
I did introduce all of you to that. And
I remember Liz's expression especially, but I assume Gub probably was the first to dive in, probably, or Phil, maybe. Oh,
I see Gub every once in a while. He still works at the Metro, or if I'm at the Gingerman, I'll see him there. And without a doubt, he will mention having a wee dram and the hag. It comes up all the time. Philip Hill, like, I see him, not very often, but he'll bring that up too. That was a good time.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll get there. I think that's actually right around the corner a little bit. But okay, maybe that is the next step. Is that, I still want to linger on moving from listening to music into wanting to play in a band. Was that a natural progression for you? Or is it, I mean, do you remember that moment of like first playing in a band? And was it a punk band immediately?
Aside from sitting on my parents' couch trying to play Bob Dylan songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden realizing punk rock was something that, not to dumb it down, but it was way more achievable to do than anything else. I don't remember how it started or when it came around, but I think anybody who's a musician wants to play with other people, or, you know, there's something in you that can has that drive. You want to be in a band, or for me, not playing in front of people. I don't care if I never played in front of people ever again. As long as I'm in a room playing with other people, I love that. Like, practice, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I'm one of the things that I think is interesting about you and me, and it will come up later when you actually were used to replace me, but we both seem to be very, even though I had, even Black House was my baby, I still feel myself as in many ways a supporter musically, like, of other people. Like, I love that. Mm-hmm. Some people don't. Yep. I mean, it surprised me that some people would rather be that, you know, that forefront figure, but I always liked being the second, you know, hand in a band. There's something really nice about it. Like, it's still a lot of responsibility. You have a little bit less of the weight of the, you know, all the weight of the band, like where its direction, but you're still a big part of supporting it. And there's, I don't know. And playing those songs is great too. I don't know. There's something really nice about the position that you and I often take place in a band.
I agree fully. The thing with, even in Black House that I noticed, like the dynamic that you guys had, it was more family-like than a band. Like, there was a closeness and, I don't know, just very easy going with all of you.
Yeah, I worked hard on that, actually. I mean, I think that was an actual goal of mine, because I was very unhappy with my, not my overall experience, but when I reflect back on the mine Ben's relationship in Weasel, I did miss it becoming a family. And I think it had at times its chance to do that.
Yeah.
But it failed because of a flaw within ourselves, you know, that we couldn't keep everybody around. So I was happy that I achieved that with even the blackouts, but it hurts to this day still because I miss those people like family, you know.
I bet you do. Yeah, I mean, I think your drummer changed a couple of times, right? Bice, and when you
Bice was the only actual member of the band. We've toured it because the original band was sans drummer. You know, we would practice without a drummer. We'd only record with Lumley, and then we bring some. I'd hire a drummer for a tour,
right?
But one day, I'll tell this little story. One day, Bice had been, my sister actually brought him in. My sister worked with him in Boston when they worked together. And I hired him without even hearing him play. We just talked on the phone once and I was like, okay, get on a plane. You're doing our tour. But there's like a third tour where me and Bice were like, I think you're in the band now, Bice. And he goes, yeah, I think I am. And then I said, you know what that means? It's I can't pay you anymore.
Nice.
So I said, do you want to be in the band?
No.
And he's like, yeah, I do. But it was really funny to say, because none of us, you know, we got our per diems, but I mean, I would pay a drummer to be on tour with us, but if you're part of the band, you have to suffer like the rest of us, you know?
So three tours in, finally you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
So yeah, so that it was very important to become for it to be a family. And yeah, I guess I do see that in you too. And that's part of being a supporter, is maybe eventually hoping that becomes like a full unit like that. Is that in your mind at all? Like when you're thinking about that, your position in a band?
To be honest, the Cheats, when we first started out, I was on bass. Mike Byrne was on guitar. Dan, I mean, it was the Methadones without Pete.
Yeah. I actually just I quickly watched the Subordinate Festival one where, and I didn't even know that it was oh, Mike's there. Oh, Simon's. Oh, what is this band?
Yeah. So we were all good friends. Obviously, Dan and I had that Weasel Riverdales thing.
We touch on this a little bit later, but Simon was on the Riverdales record Tarantula, which came out in 2010.
And it was just going to be a one-off show, just at Cobra. They put it on for us, but we had so much fun, and Dan had all these songs. So we did. It just kind of just naturally went, and we were all pretty tight, good friends. The Cheats have had different lineups since then. I think that I'm the only one that's still there with Dan. But the Methadones now, Dan and I were talking about this last week or 2 weeks ago. Just there's a connection. You could play with anybody and make good music, but it's very rare to get a level of connection where everybody's just, you know, you do anything for the guy standing next to you, like friendship and camaraderie, whatever you want to call it. But I think it's pretty rare, and I love where I'm at right now with that.
Cool, we'll get there. Let's step back and we'll get back into that. How much do you think coming to visit us at the House of Blues show, did that plant that seed of wanting to move? I think I remember talking to you about that did have something to do with
it. I
can't remember.
So that was the first... That was my first trip to Chicago. I fell in love with the city back then. Like, you were an amazing host, took me around, like showed me all the stuff. And yeah, I kind of just, I don't know. I came back every year or two, visited. Yeah, I nothing has been a calculated move in my life. I just seem to fall into wherever the hell I'm at. So it's strange.
Well, okay. So I think somewhere in there before you move back, I actually just remember this too, that you actually helped me design the Fall of the House of Usher CD. That's the one where I think you even took pictures. I remember each page was a decaying room.
Oh, yeah.
Paid for by like big supporters of the band.
Yep.
And you were actually helping me compile that into doing layout. Or I guess they would call that layout design, right?
Yeah, I forgot about that. That was cool. Did we not do a website as well?
We did.
Well, there was creaking floors and like a figure would appear.
Yeah.
I wish I had all that stuff still.
Yeah, I had a grand scheme of having that all be on a CD and it being like, even I talked to Paul Russell, who, you know, who worked with Halo and designed the Weasel. I was like, how possible is it at this time of day to put on the CD like a actual decaying house where the person has to go through and find the songs? And he was like, Almost impossible, John. Like no budget, no time. It's like,
There's money for them.
I still to this day want to do that. I wanted, even though we're past CDs, I mean, now you could probably just do it all digital online and actually still do it, but I want to have a house that you can't just play the CD was the idea. You can't just play it. You actually have to go and do this thing where you walk through a house when you put the CD in and you discover each song like in the house, you know, like one is on a reel to reel. One is like on the radio that's hidden like in a closet or something. One is on a record that you have to put on. And I remember telling Paul, I was like, that's an amazing idea, but there's no way in hell you're going to be able to do that. So
and
I
back
think
then it would probably cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. You should have got Bice to fund it. He had all the money from touring with you guys for 3 years.
I should have thought of that. When I came to you, it was whatever nuts and bolts we could do. And yes, I think we put a website, which was very simple.
Yeah. Just that, yeah. It wasn't quite, hit the imagination point, but we did our best.
But was I one of your first album designers? Or I think you had done some before that because I had known that you did that. Or did you offer that information? I can't remember. And also it doesn't show up in Discogs as one of the ones that you designed. So hopefully someone who listens to this who works.
Yeah, I would love to see that again. I've probably got a copy of it stuffed in a box in my dad's attic, but just talking about it, I wish I could pull out and look at it right now just so those memories just that might have been the first thing.
I actually wrote down the day. That's 2006, it says here. So you were probably working at around 2005, somewhere around there.
I know they did some stuff for Ben, but I can't remember. I can't remember dates or years.
I'll look that up and see, because it was hard to, because it shows some of yours on the site that you've, let's see, for instance, here, I have it. This is my notes right now. So it says visual. Yeah, and the first one, it says 2005, which is After All and Find a Way on Measured Records. Is that you?
What's that?
That's you, Simon Lamb. And it says visuals. It says layout, Simon Lamb, written by the Hazy Janes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was me. The Hazy Janes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're a band from Dundee. Great, great band.
So that's listed here as the first one that you did, 2005.
Okay, I did stuff for the Apers as well.
It's not listed on here, but Apers and we're not listed here either. So it would have been like, you did ours in 2006. You did layout for it.
Are you sure it was 2006? It must have been 2005.
Yeah, 2000. I mean, it was released in 2006, so it was probably 2005 that you did it. So you were one of the few people I know that actually did and is doing what you went to college for.
Again, I don't know how I'm not doing it, but I'm doing it. Yeah, I went to school for it. I actually didn't finish. I dropped out. And I remember the guy telling me, you will never make anything of yourself. You'll never be a designer. I'm like, good, I don't care. And right away, I ended up working as a designer. And here I am still doing it.
Are you a completely freelance, or do you actually you have a company you work for too?
No, I've got a couple of decent contracts, but I'm still just me.
Wow.
So it's terrifying and exhausting, but the way you can bend it to fit your life, especially like if we're playing shows or with the Cheats of the tour in Italy, 2014, I think, and I took my laptop with me and worked. I didn't miss a day of work, so. Luckily the internet is around, so I mean it wasn't the most fun. Everybody else is off partying and sightseeing,
and there you are with your laptop.
But I mean, I still got bills to pay, and I was able to get by, so it was pretty cool. Really lucky.
Yeah. When did you make the big move to did you know you were leaving? Oh, you must have, because you had to like get a visa and stuff, right? So what was your first to come to America?
So it was 16 years ago. I'd met, actually, I had just been over. I'd stayed with Ben for a week, and then I went out to Rotterdam and stayed with, do you remember Marino from the Apers?
I didn't even know here. You're here on as Giant Eagles. I mean, your name is crossed off in the legacy, but it does show you as having participated in that band.
Giant Eagles were a band that formed in 2014. A couple of the members were from the Apers, including Evo and Marino. Also in that band was Ox and another Simon. And Simon Lam is written as being in the band and crossed out, as I said, on Discogs, but now let's hear why.
That's funny because yeah, when I was actually that's that trip, like I was in Chicago for a week, then went out there. I was in a room in his girlfriend's apartment for a while. Again, fortunate if there's internet, I could work. So I'm just kind of bouncing around, and we started messing around one night after too many beers, just doing silly sort of Ramones, like stupid songs. And then one of them actually ended up being pretty good, and I can't remember the name of the band back then, but that is how the Giant Eagles started.
Wow, so you're part of the genesis of that super band.
We're a lot better now than when we first started, that's for sure.
Are you then on any of the recordings, or do you just have something to do with some of the? So, did they
No,
use any of the songs that you
I haven't
tooled
got a
with?
clue. I think he's just being funny and putting my name in there because that's how it was birthed, but.
So you're one of the parents, but you did not see it grow up or part of it, not
No, I
part of
got
its
divorced
life.
and left. Yeah.
Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control.
Welcome to the middle of the show, where I get to talk to you about this week's sponsor. I have told you about ingredients brought to your door to make your meals at home, but sometimes I know whether it's going to work and then you're going to go to some punk concert that night, or you do two jobs like a lot of people, or you just don't have time and you just want to sit in front of the TV and veg out. You might want someone to cook this meal for you. And now that we're in the thick of summer, you might be looking for wholesome, convenient meals to support sunny, active days. Well, Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, can help you fuel up fast with flavorful and nutritious ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save the time, eat well, and stay on track reaching your goals. If you're worried about whether this is nutritious or not, or if you're on a diet, well, also you can stick to your wellness goals with premium, ready-to-eat meals featuring high-quality ingredients such as broccolini, leeks, and asparagus. Treat yourself to 34-plus weekly restaurant-quality options like bruschetta shrimp risotto. Ooh, that sounds great. If you've ever seen the movie Big Night, you can learn a lot about risotto and that it's not just rice. You can also get Green Goddess Chicken, which sounds divine, and Grilled Steakhouse Filet Mignon, which can also be read incorrectly as Filet Mignon. These meals are ready in just 2 minutes. And if you're looking for calorie-conscious options this summer, you can try delicious dietitian-approved calorie-smart meals with around or less than 50 calories per serving. But there are also larger meal options like keto to calorie smart, vegan and veggie, and protein plus, prepared by chefs and approved by dietitians. Each meal has all of the ingredients you need to feel satisfied all day while meeting your goals, while hammering down on your guitar or your drums, or standing in that pit craving the energy to whip yourself around that dangerous circle. So do me a favor and head to Factor Meals, Factor Meals, MEALS.com/Jughead50, and use code Jughead50 to get 50% off. That's code Jughead50 at FactorMeals.com/Jughead50 to get 50% off. Now back to Simon and me.
Johnny's got a bomb and he's out of control.
When I came back from that trip, I remember going home. A friend called me up. It's like, "Hey, come out to the show tonight. There's a band playing." I was like, "Ah, I just got back." I went out and then ended up bumping into a girl I ended up dating for a long time, and she was on a study abroad program, and she was from Illinois. So it turned out we got talking. She knew a bunch of the same people. After her trip to Scotland was up, I'm like, "Well, I can work for myself, so I'll come out there." So like went back and forth for a while. And then eventually the government were like, "You can't keep on doing this." So we had to sort of scramble and prove that it was a legitimate relationship. Then I got, what did I get first? Yeah, green card. I got the green card pretty quickly. Then I went through the whole process and became a citizen.
Are you now, what do you still have like a two passports? Are you a two visa person? Or
Yeah, like James Bond.
yeah.
You got way more than that, but yeah, I've got a UK passport and my US passport, so
Now.
I could leave the US on my US passport. When I get to immigration in the UK, I can give them my UK passport and just,
Right.
yeah.
Nice. That's
Yeah, it's pretty
nice.
good.
See, my father was Canadian, and everyone always tells me that I could probably go up there and get my Canadian passport, but I just never been too lazy and never did it. But it might be a nice thing to have when Americans are doing something stupid again in the world. It'd be nice to travel on a
Well, I
Canadian
was going to
passport
say, when this
instead.
country finally takes a shit, yeah, I'm
Yeah.
out here.
Well, I'm hoping to have maybe my Japanese passport by then so I could.
can you get that pretty easily, or is it tough?
It'll be tough, but it might happen. We'll see.
Good. Yeah, I
Well,
hope it does. If that's what you want, then go for it.
so now we're edging towards the territory we're talking about. Like you and I, we had never had any falling out or anything, but I think we were just busy in different worlds at the time because I don't remember seeing you at all, like when you first moved here.
No, I think when I first moved, I came out to the house a couple of times. You threw a couple of parties. I think at the time, Dan was living with you, and
Oh, that's right,
maybe Mike
Dan.
Byrne. I can't remember. Mike might not have moved in at that point, but yeah, just different things going on all the time.
Yeah, because it's kind of funny because, yeah, so for the audience, I think probably know, Jughead's basement is named from my actual basement, and Vapid lived in my house for a long time, 7 years, but I didn't live there then, which is weird.
Right.
I had like three other places. It sounds like extravagant, but it was really, I was just spending all my money on places to stay for some strange reason.
I remember the first time I came over, and it was for that Weasel show at the House of Blues, and you're like, "No, you stay with me." I'm like, "Okay." So we're staying in your apartment, which was it Sheffield?
Yeah, it was in Lincoln Park in Sheffield at
Yeah.
my studio apartment there. Yeah.
No, it was a huge apartment.
That was in Andersonville.
Okay, so you had that place, you had
Yeah.
the house in Jefferson Park, and you had the Panic Button office right
Yeah,
by that
the
L stop.
panic button was one on Sheffield.
Right, okay, that's where I'm getting
Yeah,
mixed
so
up.
well, I'm surprised you even remember
I'm surprised I remember
that.
that. I don't remember what I did yesterday, but I've got that in my head. It was above the coconuts, right? Or there was a coconuts
Yeah, there
nearby.
was a coconut and there was an Einstein's bagels right there. So I remember
Right.
I used to go all night and dance at this club called Neo, and then I would come home like at 5 in the morning and always talk to the bagel people because they were just starting work when I was getting home.
Yep, I remember you telling me that. Yeah, it's awesome. But yeah, you had I was like, wow, this guy's got like three places here. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was not, I mean, it was complicated. I can't really get into the depth, but it wasn't like I purposely like that. I inherited the studio apartment because my friend Peter moved away. Did you ever meet Pete, my
I
friend
never
who
met Peter.
passed away? But he was a crazy guy, and I sort of inherited his place because in Lincoln Park, which is like a rich area, but for some reason there was one building of artists that was $300 flat fee, but you had to fix anything that broke, and a lot of things broke. But it was just that one building, and people next to me were paying like thousands of dollars, and we all
Yeah.
paid like $300. So that became the Panic Button
That's
office.
right.
And I also had the house with Jim, who I had my apartment with, which is where like Weasel would rehearse in Logan Square. And Anita was a recovering alcoholic, and Jim, my friend Jim, drinks a lot. So she wouldn't stay there. So we had to get a place near the neo-futurist. So that's why I had three places.
Okay.
But
Now it makes sense.
some nights I would come out of my show at the theater or somewhere else, and I'd stand on this corner where I could go to either three places. And I would just stand there sometimes for like an hour going, where am I going?
Feel like tonight?
Some of it
Not
was like
well.
anxiety, like, where am I going?
Early. Oh, the builds of those places would be anxious enough for me.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, all three. I think I've been at the house more than anything. But you've still got that place, right?
I still have the house. Yes.
Yeah.
So even after that, we started, it became Jughead's basement after that, where people would play in the basement, like shows that lost their venues in town. I think you Which Vapid one was one of the first ones? Vapid was, there was a band, two bands from New York that came in, and then Vapid's band. I don't even know if you were playing in that one then. I don't know if it was the Methadones or...
It must have been the Methadones.
I think it must have been the Methadones that played my basement. Yeah.
I played your basement with Dan, but it was, we did acoustic.
Yeah. I heard that. Yeah.
Was that your 50th?
Yes.
Right.
No, well, you also played the one with, was it Dr. Frank that came out? And
I wish I could remember. I saw a man. It really is.
I started doing ones where I raised money for my punk heart, and you and Vapid did acoustic set at that. I think it was Dr. Frank, you and Even a Blackouts, I think was that one.
Oh, that was upstairs in the living room.
Yes, the living room. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. We played the basement though acoustic as well.
Ah, that's right. Yeah.
I think
the Unlovables, I don't know. I just remember they were at the show with, in the basement, the Unlovables, and it must've been Methadones at that time.
John in the future, and I'll try to do a little bit of house cleaning, but I don't know dates here. But the show that I was referring to, which was the first Jughead's Basement, was with the Steinways, Unlovables, Methadones, and Even in Blackouts. Later, Even in Blackouts played a show in the basement, and I know that Simon and Vapid played. I don't know when that was. If you do, let me know in the comments. The final show that we were referring to was a Punk Heart event that happened at Jughead's Basement, but actually in the living room. And that was August 19th and August 20th, 2017, with Dr. Frank, Dan, and Simon, and also Even in Blackouts. Back to Simon.
Yeah, that living room show was fun. We did 2 days in a row, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, it was really cool.
So I don't even know what year we're at now. So let's just get into it. So I was trying to lead up to it. So you and I are not in the same orbits really much anymore. I'm probably doing more theater than music at that time. You're diving in more. You're playing with Dan. You're spending time with Ben. And then my fallout with Ben happens. And then next thing I know is you're in the band that, I mean, I don't want to really get into it because I'll probably do another whole podcast about it, but I never really left the band. I left the corporation.
Yep.
So I was very surprised when it started again. And I was angry at you and Vapid because I don't think you were given all the right information in what was up. And I don't blame you because it's one of the bands that inspired you. Why not? And you're friends with Ben. Why not do it? But it was very weird for me. Because I felt like I lost Ben and I was, it made sense, but I felt like I lost you two also. And that seemed weird to me.
Yeah. I mean, you and I had no contact over that whole time. I mean, we're talking like a solid few years. But what happened was Ben had started sort of like thinking about doing a show, and this was just under his name. The solo show, and we ended up playing at Reggie's. He asked me to play guitar. I was like, yeah, absolutely. And you know, it was like some Weasel songs, Riverdale songs, and some of his solo stuff. And then I might be getting this wrong, but I think he then did a My Brain Hurts album set, and that's when Vapid came in.
The Brain That Wouldn't Die, accredited to Ben Weasel, in parentheses Screeching Weasel, on Asian Man Records, was released on June 23, 2009. It is described as this: The Brain That Wouldn't Die brings Ben Weasel and Danny Vapid back together for this live performance of Screeching Weasel's tunes from the classic album My Brain Hurts, as well as two additional songs recorded live at Reggie's Rock Club in Chicago, August 22nd and 23rd of 2008.
And then after that, I don't know how or why it happened, but he's like, yeah, I'm going to do Screeching Weasel again. And there's a lot of conversations I was not involved in. Mm-hmm. I'm sure like he was figuring out what he was going to do and with Dan and all that, but it was just one of those things like, yeah, of course I'm going to play guitar. But yeah, that was it.
This is some questions you can answer or not. We can cut out, but did you feel at any level? And once again, I don't blame you for this. I think it's great. Take the opportunity you can and do what you want to do. And, you know, mm-hmm. you want to pursue music, but did it feel weird to you to be, because I think basically you were taking, you were the new me, like in that band. And well, I think in some parts of Ben's mind is he does that on purpose. Like he likes to have his people that are the people, like Zach is vapid and, you know, like people have been me. They're not like themselves in the band. They're like actually trying to be that person. So yeah, did you feel that role? Like, did it feel like you were becoming that role?
I mean, your personality and especially your stage presence is so unique. I don't think you couldn't be replaced. In terms of it being weird, it was just, it was surreal that I'm standing there with, you know, these musicians that I looked up to since I was a kid. It was just, it was bizarre. And I'm not, I mean, obviously I thought about you quite a lot, but I didn't want to turn down an opportunity like that, which it was. I'm not going to get too into it because there's, I'm sure there's stuff people would love to hear that I just would never talk about. But
yeah, I'm the same way. There's some things I won't touch.
But. I'm very, I didn't have the best time playing. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy it. A couple of shows were really, really good, but I'm very thankful because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have met most of the people I know now and wouldn't be playing with the people that I'm playing with now. So silver linings. I was, again, very fortunate. I'm glad we're good.
Yeah, I'm about to get to this, but is that, put my memory straight or facts straight, is that the first time you played with Vapid, or did you actually play in him with some projects before that?
No, that was the first time I played with Vapid.
Okay, so that
solo band stuff.
So in many ways, that was the foundation for your relationship with Vapid, happened through that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not so comfortable time in that band.
Like we'd known, I obviously knew who he was. I think he was aware of who I was, and we'd run into each other at the Beat Kitchen or wherever. But then, yeah, we kind of, I mean, Ben was, he's living up, I don't know if he still is, but he was living up in Madison at the time. So we would go up for 5 days straight and, you know, rehearse. And so that's how it became sort of like really sort of bonded with Dan doing that stuff.
What then? I didn't know this because I, once again, I try to ignore that part of the history of Weasel, and just, it's better in my mind just not to go there. But since I was interviewing you, I had to go there for a little bit. But I thought you were there for South by Southwest, but you were out before then.
John in the future about the past here. I've done a very good job over the years of not discussing publicly the incident that happened at South by Southwest in 2011. If you were not aware of it, it's very easy to find online. You could just Google Ben Weasel involved in altercation at SXSW, which is South by Southwest. There's also an official letter that he posted, and also a letter that I refer to very soon in this interview with Simon about the four band members at the time quitting Screeching Weasel. Back to the story.
I left the band. I think that was the next show after I'd quit.
Ah, so right. So you weren't, because I was surprised to see that you weren't one of the four on that letter. And I was like, oh, okay. So Simon was out before then. So you left on your own accord.
I did.
Before then.
Yeah.
Is that stuff you'd rather not talk about? Or was it just wasn't a good environment for you? Or?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what it was like. So I decided I didn't want to do it anymore. If I start talking, there's stuff will come out. And
yeah, but I mean, I'm just trying to just superfluously or go over it just lightly. But you did, you were basically on one of the Riverdale's records. You did the live record. You did one of his solo records?
No, I didn't do any.
No, you didn't do a solo. You did the art for something of his, right?
I did art for some of his records. The Riverdale's one was, I think Justin Perkins was playing bass at the time.
Yeah.
And Dan and Ben were both playing guitar. And there was a show that Ben had booked. Justin couldn't do it. He's like, could you play bass? I'm like, sure. And again, I can't remember how or why it happened. But I mean, Dan is such a good musician. He's a really, really good bass player. So he switched to bass and I went to guitar in the Riverdale's. And then we did that one record, Tarantula.
Yeah. See, that meant when I started doing studying of you, Simon, I was like, oh, no. Because I'm trying to see into the frame of like the Jughead and the Weasel in that time period, but you were really like you were like a mesh of a Vapid and a Jughead together, because you were bass and guitar, which is a very Vapid thing to have gone from one to the other. And then and you were sort of Vapid's that part too, that because you started even in the Cheatses in that show that I saw, you were on bass.
Yeah.
You moved to guitar. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun playing bass. I really liked it back then.
Yeah. Well, so that's, I think we touched that good. I mean, we touched it gently, and I think that's fine. So let's go into the exciting stuff. So you and Vapid just get excited to work together, right? Is that.
I love him to death. Like we've got, it's beyond friendship now. It's like, just like family, like him and his wife, Alicia, and the kids. Yeah. But, we just play really, really well together. And whether it's with a full band or with an acoustic in his basement, just, I don't know, there's something there that is fun and exciting.
Yeah, I already knew that was there, but when I really became aware of it when, with that show, it was the Even a Blackout's Dr. Frank, I think, and you guys, and then he really wanted you there with him. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I watched you two together. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like you could just pull things out that he, you know, you're sort of in his mind a little bit to know where he's going and what he wants to do next. And that comes with a lot of time together and a lot of like love for each other, it seems.
Yeah, it's really cool. That's what I was saying earlier. Like there's, you could play with so many different musicians and make music, but it's rare to have a connection that really like, you know, where he's going to go with that chord at the end, or he knows what I'm going to do. It's just this, and it's fun. It's just, it makes me smile. It's really cool.
Yeah. So let's get, let's touch those, the facts on that, and then we'll get to the future and then we're done. So, but I want to dwell on this, you and Vapid stuff. Cause I think it's, to me, that's like the story. So the Weasel thing happens. Then what does Dan call you up, or do you remember how you started working with him?
When we were playing together in the solo stuff and then Weasel and Riverdale's, we'd always be messing around just acoustics, doing stuff that is so far removed from that type of music. And say, like, we should do something like this one day. Still to this day, we talk about doing an acoustic record, just getting the time. But after the Weasel stuff happened, South by Southwest, I think Ben had a weekend booked at Reggie's where he was doing sort of a Weasel Fest or something. I can't remember.
Yeah, well, I can fill in that one because it was the Mangies and a couple other bands.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And the big irony is I was the only Weasel actually at that show because the Mangies called me and asked me if I wanted to play. And I was like, is Ben going to be there? So I actually played with them that night. So a couple songs with them. So
did you?
Yeah. It was really fun. It was really, it's kind of, and in a weird, not so proud, it felt good to be the only, to be the Weasel that was actually there for the anniversary.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Really cool. And especially with those guys, God, they're so.
Oh, I did a whole tour. I love playing with the Mangies. I'm lucky I got to play with the Lillingtons, which is one of my favorite punk bands to play with. I play with the Mangies. But so anyway, yeah, I think I read that. So there was a show or a festival that was canceled and then Dan wanted to put something together to play that.
Oh yeah. So yeah. It was the same weekend as the thing that Ben was going to do, I believe.
Yeah.
Do you know the Cobra Lounge at all?
Yeah.
It's on Ashton. Yeah. So I can't remember how we ended up there. I mean, we would hang out there. We still to this day, I'm out there. But we did the show there. And like I said, it was going to be a one-off, just get together. People were going to be in town. People had booked flights before Ben's thing had gotten canceled. So it's like, why not do it? So we did it. And
that is just basically Vapid taking stuff from every band he had been to and you guys just learning it all pretty quickly. Yeah. And
yep. So we had the Methadones, Riverdale's, a couple of Weasel songs, probably a Mope song, just a couple of covers. It was just fun. It was just like, let's get together and just play a show. Mm-hmm. And then it was so much fun. And of course, Dan, who is constantly sitting on a arsenal of songs. Oh, I got these songs. How, you guys want to do a record? I was like, yeah, let's do a record. And once that record was done, he's like, I've got these songs. Should we do another record? And it's like, yes. just kept on going. Still to this day. I mean, he's right now, we are we've just started working on a new Methadone's record, and Dan's sitting on about 60 songs.
Wow. Yeah, that man's always writing. Me and him talked about, like, he has his little recorder when he's delivering his mail, and he's always humming and figuring out songs. He's one of the, I wouldn't say unsung, because people in the know Vapid, but I wouldn't even say beyond punk. I think he's one of the best writers out there and singers. Yeah. He's up there with Cheap Trick, what's his name, Xander, and like some of the best rock and roll singers, you know.
Yeah, Dan's got something in him that is, again, a rare thing. I think he's just so good. You give him a guitar and he'll just, or you hit a riff and he'll run with it. And a great guy, just one of the best.
Yeah, and he's a great imitator too. Like, he doesn't usually do covers of other people's bands as much, but like in the studio, he would just crack me up doing, whether it was like, one day he was doing the, what's that band that I hate? I just forgot the name. They have the cover of the album where they have bananas for their naked. What's the name of that band? Oh, no. Red Hot Chili Peppers. He used to do an imitation of that LA song or whatever. I can't remember.
He did.
Yeah, yeah. We were in the studio for Wiggle, I think, and he just cracked me up for like 30 minutes just singing.
It was a tube sock. It wasn't a banana.
It was a tube sock. You're right. Yeah. Banana must have been some other thing. Yeah. But he was kind of, because Panic at that time was a huge fan of Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Vapid didn't like him. So he would just constantly be breaking into one of their songs.
I can see him doing that.
But it did plant that seed in me. It was like, wow, that guy could, like, even these things he's making fun of, he's doing exactly like how they play it, how they sing it.
Yeah.
I knew he was like a master at that. He's just born. He's one of those born brilliant musicians.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is it about you? Like, let's talk about yourself and try to be objective about yourself. What is it about you that draws Vapid? Like, he's bringing you into all of his things. Like, you weren't into Methadones technically, but you're not. It seems like whatever he's going to do, at least for the time being, you're someone he wants to do it with.
Yeah, I'm not. Again, like, I know I'm repeating myself, but going back to, there's connections that you get with people. And we were speaking about this a couple of weeks ago on the phone. I think it comes down to that. Like, I honestly don't know what else it would be. He could throw a rock and hit 50 people who could play guitar better than I could for any of his projects. But I don't know, there's someone there, so I love it.
And the Cheats have gone through a different lineup changes, but is that cemented, from what you know, and Vapid, does he consider that, like, he's created so many bands, but yeah. That one seems to have, I think that's fifth record right now. So it seems to be a cemented, at least, concept for a band for him, unlike like the Numbers one, which was one record or these things that he dabbles in.
Yeah, I forget the name of the Noise by Numbers.
Noise by Numbers, yeah. Which is actually a great record.
It's like, a really good record. Yeah. A really good record. The Cheat stuff is, I think now it's kind of morphed into, I mean, the first two records are very Vapid, very like classic Dan. Now I think Dan looks at it as a band or a project where he could do anything. It doesn't matter if it doesn't sound like the next song, or like it could be a mix of things. So as a creative outlet, he could use that. The Methadones, again, like, similar to you, like, I replaced Mike Byrne. Again, there was maybe a couple of issues going on. There was a show got brought. It was Italy, I think. We got asked to play, or they got asked to play. Whatever happened, and Dan asked if I would do a show or two. Like, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Of course. And Mike and I are fine. Like, I saw Mike at Sludgeworth's show just a couple of months ago, and yeah, there's no bad blood as far as
I'm aware. No, I think, I mean, I saw Mike go through some shit too, and he's been on the podcast and talked a little bit about it, but he kind of knew he did some bad things to himself and to others. So yeah. I don't think it's like,
I'm glad he's okay though. I know Mike did have a couple of rough patches, and come out the other side pretty good, I think. So
yeah, I'm really happy a lot of us has come out of this other side of these stuff, and we're still communicating. So I have to go back and correct myself. So you're not in all of Abbott's, because you're not doing Sludgeworth, because that's the original
That's the original band.
Right. Yeah. So there's no place for you in there.
It would be, I think it would be too much of me standing beside Dan.
Yeah.
It's funny because the first Methadone show I played with them was last summer. And the Cheats were on the bill. And the Cheats drummer couldn't do the show. So we asked Susie, who's the Methadone drummer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So literally it was like the Cheats played and then we switched out bass players and then the Methadones played. Yeah, yeah. But it sounds a lot different. I mean, there's a...
Yeah, no, and that's one of the wonders of Vapid is he can put his mind in a different space and it's his voice, what's backing that voice is completely different. Like,
yeah.
Like Mopes is nothing like the Methadones. And I realized that when he came to us with those, because it was supposed to be a Mopes record, he came to me with those songs and I was like, this is like a, I mean, I still want to call it the Mopes, but this is like a different band. So, So I dropped from that project and it became a different band. So he does go through these periods where it just comes out its own thing. And maybe like you had said, maybe the Cheats is his ability to break from that pattern a little bit and just do whatever the hell he wants in that.
Yeah. I think he's more comfortable now where he can just, not that he's like, fuck it, I'm going to do whatever I want, but he's been doing it so long and so many projects, and he's got so many ideas that are all different. I mean, he's got a country song or electronic song. Like he's it's in him. He's got so much. So having an outlet where he could just not have to worry about being in a box. He could do whatever he wants with the Cheats, I think.
All right. Now the last thing I want to talk about with song, I'm just interested. Creativity is interesting and you seem to be a great supporter of things. Is there anything in your artistic pursuits where you think you take the lead, or are you just always comfortable being the support? Like even in your other art forms, I mean, is there something that you feel like you are the lead in? Like, I feel like all artists need something. It's not about ego. It's just something where they channel their creative ideas to. Do you have something like that, do you think?
I painted. Actually, I had a gallery in Oak Park for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a little collective going, and I would paint, but I quickly realized that I enjoyed painting and loved painting and was able to relax doing it. As soon as I had to do a painting for a show, I'm like, oh, fuck, this is, I hate it.
Yeah.
So I don't think I've painted in 2 years now, which is funny because the Circus Maximus thing was Dan, myself, and our friend Jason West put this art music show together. I didn't have anything in it because I didn't want a deadline. I just didn't want to deal with it.
I actually went back to look at that and I go, oh, that's right. Simon doesn't even have any art in there. So I don't even know if I've seen, like even in your graphic design work you do, are you taking other people's images and dealing with those, or do you create art within those projects?
I do lead with that, but it's honestly, it's so constrained. It's like corporate and there's very little fun involved in that stuff for me, and I'm burnt out as hell on
right but you're good at it. You have the skill set so you can get it done now.
I'm lucky. But as far as taking lead, it's funny, I just literally about 3 hours ago, Susie and I have got another project going with Wimpy and B-Face.
Oh wow. Neat.
It's not going to, I don't think it will be a band that are going to play out or do anything, but it's like, I had these tunes that I could hear Wimpy sort of snarling and snotting over. And I just threw them down really quickly. I emailed them to Wimpy just like 4 hours ago. So I'll see what comes of that. And then Mike and I are like Bert and Ernie, honestly, like, we're around the same age, we're both single, and it's just like, let's do everything we can because it's going to come to a stop one day. So we're also playing with Bill Stevens from Naked Ray Gun and Fritz and this girl called Ali Jados. So we've started, I mean, it's nothing crazy serious, but we get together once a week and sort of just play.
Yeah, Fritz is a great guy. He's one of the best friends of my friend Mark Montgomery, who I knew from theater school at Columbia, and they're really good friends. So I knew Fritz from way back then too.
Again, like I'm standing there, I'm like, holy fuck, how did I end up here? Like, what's Bill Shred on the guitar? And Fritz he's such a good bass player.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
Ali can she sing her heart out. And of course, then Susie's like one of my favorite drummers as well. So it's really cool.
So I guess I guess I'm asking you, and once again, this isn't important because I think it's cool, the person who does what you do. And I spend most of my time doing that. I have my projects where they're about me. I don't really like that. I like even Black Ops, I like to start it with me and then pass it off to other people with me. Mm-hmm. But do you ever think about yourself in that respect? Like, do you crave or do you think about yourself as the artist? I mean, is that a weird question?
That's a good question. I think, well, you just touched on it there. Like, you started, when you were first visiting me in Scotland, you were like, I've got this idea for a band, and we're just going to be acoustic. You were going to have the old school...
Megaphones, yeah. With the, megaphones. Not electric ones, just like actual... Yeah, which we did. It didn't work. It actually, one audience member could hear it, because what that does is it channels a loud sound to, like, one or two people.
But yeah, I want this band, and you know, if there's a power outage, we can play. Like, so it's just like these fun concepts you have, and yeah, that was you that started it. But like I said, when you eventually came through Scotland and I saw you, you guys were like a family. It wasn't like this one guy with an ego who's like, "All right, you." Just worked really well with other people. So yeah, I don't ever want to be in that position. I also don't think I'm talented enough to be in that position or have ideas to be in that position, but I love being with other people and making us something together.
Simon, that's a pretty good ending. We've gone an hour and 15, pretty good. Is there anything we didn't touch on that you feel is lacking or that you thought we would talk about, or you have a question for me? You don't have to have anything, but you can take a pause to think about that if you want.
No, I think we covered a lot. I mean, we could have probably talked for hours about certain things.
Yeah.
But there's definitely things that are best left sleeping.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like what I did, I told Vap that I would tell the audience that, so he was okay with it. But after me and him did his one, and when me did the one with Lawrence and Mass and him, mm-hmm. we had these conversations afterwards, which were more like personal about things like that, and how affected he was by like that whole craziness and all that.
Yeah.
And how we even hated ourselves that it still lingers in us, you know, that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I'm really glad you got me on here, and I'm really glad that we're still friends. It's been 20, if it was 99 that I met you, 24 years.
Well, our 25th, we'll have to get together and celebrate.
We should. Actually,
I'll look up that date, because I mean, it's actually a very findable date. Like when you came down, probably right before the first show that we had. So
if you could, yeah, that'd be a lot. If you
know, we'll have our anniversary, our 25th anniversary.
Yeah, text it to me. If you're in Japan, we'll Zoom call.
Yeah. All right, Simon.
Keep in touch. It's good to see your face, John.
You too, Simon. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Simon Lam and John Pearson met at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in August of 2000. So their 25th anniversary will be in August of 2025. See you there, Simon. It sucks when I'm the left of it. If you have made it this far, you just got done listening to I'm a Contrarian by Dan Vapid and the Cheats off their 2013 record, 2. The Riverdale song and the Dan Vapid songs were personally chosen by Simon. Thank you, everybody. That was a lovely time and a good catch-up for me. I hope you enjoyed two friends chatting away, discussing things we probably haven't actually discussed before. So I'm glad that Simon allowed us to do that publicly. Remember to check out the tribute to Naked Raygun, where all the proceeds go to the family of Pierre Kesdy. That's called Godspeed, a tribute to Pierre Kesdy. You can find that online. If you're listening to this in the present tense, it might not have come out yet, but I think it comes out on July 28th, 2023, this year, if you're living in the now. Up soon, speaking of that, I am having my long-awaited second conversation with John Haggerty about his life in music. I'm very much looking forward to chatting with him again. It's been years since me and Vapid did the Throb Throb episode on Jughead's Basement. Also up soon, I have a fellow named Aaron Leatherbarrow. He was recommended to me by Ryan Rockwell of the Mixtapes and my current band Semi-Famous. Aaron is known as the punk rock teacher official. He is pretty well known on the TikTok, which I know nothing about, and I'll dig in before I interview him this week. So please check that out. Also upcoming, I am scheduling an interview with Donnie from the band Grumpster, which is a new band I discovered because of my episode with Lucy Giles. I really took to this band Grumpster, and I listen to them quite a bit now, so I'm excited to talk to Donnie. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot. Patreon and all that shit, so help out as much as you can and as much as you're comfortable doing. Or uncomfortable. Life is about being uncomfortable sometimes. And let me have that uncomfortability. Give it to me. Let me have your uncomfortableness. I want it. I love you all to varying degrees on a very large scale from 0 to 6,000. Goodbye.